Hi, and welcome to SpondyCast, where we bring together the best medical minds, thought leaders, scientists, patients, and caregivers to inform and inspire the spondylitis community. I'm your host, Jill Miller, living my best spa life, knowing that how we meet today has the power to change everything going forward. Please note that the information provided in this podcast should not be considered medical advice. We do encourage all listeners to consult their healthcare professionals for medical concerns. Thank you for listening, and we hope you find our discussion today enlightening. Hi, and welcome to SpondyCast. Today, our guest is Lucine Mehrabi. She was selected as one of the most influential negotiation professionals globally, and she is a professional negotiator, trainer, and inspirational speaker. For over 23 years, she has been involved in resolving complex multi-billion dollar negotiations. As the global head of negotiation training and a board advisor, Lucine helps leaders to win their negotiations while maintaining strong relationships. As a sought-after speaker, she's booked across the world for impactful keynotes and negotiations on leadership. Her dynamic, disruptive, and authentic speaking style keeps audiences captivated and engaged, leaving them the tools, mindset, and confidence to succeed. She believes that the world becomes a better place through negotiation and provides people with insights to grow through adversity and develop better relationships with others and themselves. She regularly shares her expertise in her podcast, Life Negotiations, and as a guest on other podcasts in international media and at universities. Prior to becoming a professional negotiator, Lucine worked in senior leadership roles in finance. For 15 years, she was responsible for sales and strategy on trading floors of financial institutions such as Citigroup, the New York Stock Exchange, Euronext. As a true world citizen, she is a graduate of 3 international business schools, holds 4 nationalities, and speaks 5 languages. She currently lives in Dubai with her husband and 2 children. In her free time, she loves to be in nature, travel, read about health, mindset, and happiness. And today we are going to talk about negotiating life, turning advocacy and adversity into empowerment, resilience, and inner peace. Lucine, welcome to SpondyCast. How are you?
Very well, thank you. It's a pleasure talking to you, Jill.
Great, so let's get started. So I'm sure some of our listeners are trying to figure out how we're going to take negotiation into our own lives. I believe like you, everything is a negotiation. But can you tell us a little bit about your background and how you got into negotiating?
Yes, absolutely. And I also want to say that a part of me is totally aligned with your audience, because I also spend a lot of my time in the medical world, whether that is when I'm teaching people from the medical world, doctors, patient advocacy groups, or as the mother of a special needs child. So it's not a total coincidence that I'm here. I'm not here only with the capacity of a professional negotiator, but also with the experience and expertise in the medical world. And that is how I connect with the audience and have the empathy for what they are going through. My background in negotiation, yes, I've been negotiating high stakes deals for the last 23, 24 years. It started on trading floors of investment banks and a stock exchange, and then more and more in the medical world. And now I help companies in all types of sectors deal with their complex negotiations. So that can be anything from M&A negotiations, commercial negotiations. I've had some suicide negotiations as well. And yes, as you rightfully say, I absolutely believe that everything in life is a negotiation, and that we all negotiate every single day, and we go from one negotiation to another. The problem is that we often don't realize that we're in a negotiation.
Yeah, for sure. Were you a negotiator as a child? Before you
negotiator? I like that question. I've shared about it in the past. It did start in my childhood, because I grew up in, my parents moved from one country to another, and we had to get used to that new culture. And my father is still extremely strict. So when we as children, as teenagers, wanted to go out, my dad was like, no, that's not going to happen. And then my sisters would push me forward and said, Luz, go negotiate with daddy. So that is a bit where it started. I always had to negotiate with my father to get things done for me and my siblings. And that's how it started. And also, I remember one time I was around 14, 15, driving to the library with my sister, and we would every week go there and get some books. And I got one book that said, How to Become a Better Lobbyist to Get What You Want. And I was so fascinated by that title. And I took the book, and my sister was like, Luz, take something your own age. I was like, but this is fascinating. Everybody should know this. Yeah, so I did have a preference for this sector from a very young age.
I love it. I think that's fantastic. And I often think about, I was actually thinking about it this morning, getting ready. A lot of times, like we want to be able to negotiate for ourselves and we don't. And
right.
Like ripping that Band-Aid off is so important. And I recall not negotiation, but being more of an activist as young as like 4 or 5. And
okay.
I'm finally refinding my inner activist 25 or 30 years later. So you were talking a bit about a child with special needs. Can you share a little bit about that if you're comfortable, and how negotiating has helped that? Because I think that helps the listeners to understand as well.
Yes, absolutely. So I'm a mother of 2 children. Alex is now 13, Elise is 10. And 7 years ago, when Alex just turned 6, we got the diagnosis that, so until then, he looked and seemed quite fine. He was walking, talking, running, jumping. But at the age of 6, we got the diagnosis that he has a severe condition called Duchenne muscular dystrophy. DMD is a muscle condition, muscle wasting condition that breaks down all of his muscles in his body. We are made of more than 600 muscles. So just imagine when all those start becoming weaker and shut off. It means that, yeah, his muscles are breaking down slowly. He loses body function one after the other, doesn't work anymore. He's now 13, is in a wheelchair, cannot walk anymore, cannot stand anymore, can slightly lift his arms, but that's becoming difficult as well. Thank God he can still talk and eat, but those things might become difficult in the future as well. There is no cure yet, and the life expectancy today is an average around 24, 25 years old.
Wow. I heard recently a quote. It said, if you have your health, you have many problems. If you don't have your health, you have one problem.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know, and that's like, as a mother, it's hard, right? It's when we're dealing with it ourselves is one thing, but when it's our children, it's another. And do you find you have to really advocate and get in the fight for him when it comes
absolutely, absolutely. And I have a lot of respect for everybody taking care of a child or a parent or a friend with special needs, because it's very heavy. All of a sudden we are transformed from being a parent to being a nurse, to being an advocate, to being, and there's a lot of negotiations happening constantly. It was when I started, I mean, before knowing about the diagnosis, I was already trained by some of the world's best negotiators, hostage negotiators. I had the certificate, certified professional negotiator. So that all sounds super cool. But it was only once he got diagnosed and I started advocating for him and having to negotiate so often to get the access to simple things, be it drugs, be it treatments, be it some stuff being taken care of by health insurance, accessibility, anything with his school. It's an ongoing process constantly. And it was when I was doing that I realized, wow, I'm negotiating all the time. And not only for him, in life, that's where I connected the dots of saying we're all negotiators. This is something we should be taught in school, because every single day we are having negotiations with somebody. As soon as there is a need and another person has another need, boom, we're in a negotiation. And then I pull it even further of saying, let's take this even further and talk about our inner negotiations, all the negotiations we have internally, the inner dialogue that we have. And then life truly is one negotiation after another. That's why I'm so passionate about this, because when we learn to become better negotiators, we get our needs met, we get more done, we have less frustration, we resolve conflict, and overall, we truly have a better life with less conflict and less drama.
So can you call it peace negotiations with yourself? Is that so? How do you, can we walk through how that works a little bit?
Yes, of course. And this too started after this diagnosis, because obviously there is a life before and after, right? As I said, the first 6 years we thought he's a healthy child, all good. And then this happened. I mean, he had some health issues, but nothing severe to that you could even imagine something like this. So when that happened, me as a woman, as a mother, I went through a lot of anger. I was angry at life. I went through a lot of grief. I went through a lot of sadness. And at one point, I had to make the decision, okay, what are you going to do with this? Are you going to stay bitter and be like that, frustrated mother? Is that the type of mother you want to be? Or is there a point where you have to say, okay, I've been dealt these cards, and I think a lot of people in the audience can resonate with this. None of us asks for adversity. None of us asks for a disease or a disease of a loved one, but it happens to us. And when it happens, we literally have two choices. It's either we're going to let that make us bitter and anger and angry and sad, which is totally legitimate and acceptable and understandable. But the question is, for how long? At one point, are we going to say, listen, this is now the thing I have to deal with? Call it destiny, call it whatever. I have to deal with this. How can I deal with this the best way? And for me, one of the basic things that need to be done is acceptance. When you accept what is, it doesn't mean you're giving up, it doesn't mean you're giving in, it just means you accept what is. And from that perspective, you start the battle, you start the fight. And then internally, it's exactly the same thing. There comes a point where we need to sit down with that inner fight and make peace. And how that happens is by extreme self-awareness, by truly taking the time to sit and analyze, what am I feeling? What is it that I need? And then we will see that there are often different types of needs. And the way I do it is I literally do the same thing as I do in the boardrooms. I create this inner boardroom where I allow every aspect of me to come and say, okay, what do you need? And then there is the inner child, there is the inner teenager, there is the inner rebel, there is the inner nerd. There's like all these versions of us that pop up, and they all have different needs. And it's fascinating to listen to those needs, because all the nagging and the frustration comes because we don't listen to those needs. So when you have inner peace negotiations, to me, it's simply sitting down with yourself, allowing everything to come up, being able to label it, and without any form of judgment, without any form of shame, simply saying, okay, I am angry because of this. I feel sadness because of that. There is fear because of that. I am scared because of that. And you allow it to be, and then you try to listen to what's beyond all these emotions, which is a need. What is the need? What is it that I need? And when you learn to satisfy your own needs without judgment, again, with the full on empathy and compassion that we deserve, there's this calmness that comes over you. And it's in that calmness that you can then make good decisions and advocate for yourself, for your child, for whoever it is you're advocating for.
That's amazing. And the needs piece, I think this is something we don't, most of us don't ever get to. I remember the first time I ever thought about it as an adult, probably in the context, someone said to me, "Well, what do you need?" And I was like, "I don't know that anyone's ever asked me that question before, including
Exactly.
myself." And when I think too, there's this being in the middle of making the choice, right? You have a diagnosis and you can choose. I'm with you. I went down the road, and I'm sure many, many people listening did. Of you do become, you go through these like grief stages, I think. And then on the other side, there is a break where you can choose the way you want to walk forward. But some of that self-awareness is really a hard thing, and getting to the nugget of what you need. And I imagine, I mean, is the need at the core of like the negotiation success?
Absolutely. I do this on negotiation tables everywhere, whether it's business or any other high-stakes negotiations. As a negotiator, your role is to understand what is the need of the other party. And let me tell you this, Jill, they never tell you. It's
right.
up to you to find it. They come with, they say what they want, okay? That's just a want. That's not a need. We need to dig further to understand what is the need. And the needs are rarely numbers. A need is often has some form of link to an emotion. Okay. I was literally talking to my husband about this yesterday, soon to be ex-husband, because we are talking about divorce and we are literally starting the divorce negotiations. And I told him, I said, listen, no matter what we don't agree on, what we do agree on is the main need we have through these divorce negotiations is number one, we have to be able to continue to co-parent in a peaceful environment. Number two, we both want to avoid court cases, drama, and this taking too long. So even if we disagree on a few details, what we agree on is the need. The need for both of us is to avoid a court case and to have a peaceful co-parenting going forward.
Right.
And he agrees on that. So then that changes. That is the main thing. When you can connect to the need of both parties, that's when you can transform a competitive environment into a collaborative one. Because now you're looking in the same direction. We're having these divorce negotiations. The goal is to come out of this in an ethical way so that we can co-parent in a peaceful environment and we can avoid court. That's what we all want. So now that you want the same thing, all of a sudden the energy changes. It's not competitive anymore. It's collaborative because you have the same end goal.
And do you find there is a line of questioning that gets you to the need?
One of the techniques that I use, whether it's with others or with myself, is what they call the five times why. And it's very simple. You ask yourself, what is it that I need? And then there's something that comes up. And then you ask yourself, why do I need that? And then there is a question and an answer. And then you ask yourself again, but why do I need that? And why do I need that? And why do I need that? And you do that several times until you come to the core need of what is it that I really, really, really need. And then you also know an indicator of you knowing that you really touched the core need is when you know that it's something that is absolutely not negotiable. You're non-negotiable because, and it often comes down to values, belief systems, the way you want to be perceived, the image you have of yourself, the things that are that truly matter to you, that you want to hang on to, emotions that you want to feel or emotions that you want to avoid feeling. That's when you know, okay, this is a non-negotiable. This is what truly matters. And it's on that level that we should negotiate. We shouldn't negotiate on the wants because that's often filled with nice-to-haves and ego. And it's totally useless to waste time negotiating on those things. But yet that's what most people do because they don't have the either the energy, the willingness, or the skills, or the awareness to continue asking questions until we get to the core problem. Many people in a negotiation solve a problem without understanding if it's the right problem.
Yeah, and I think, there's emotional interjections often, I think, in this.
For sure.
Whether it's the boardroom or I think your living room. And what is the best way to manage through that? Like if you are particularly, I know for me, and I'm guessing a lot of other people, when you're walking through this disease and you do feel like there's a lot at stake mm-hmm. and you're trying to battle for what you need, how do you manage that emotion? Like, do you use something in particular that you'd recommend?
First thing I would recommend is to see emotions as our allies. Our brain doesn't create those emotions and chemicals to piss us off. They're really here to help us and they have a goal. So the more we befriend our emotions, the more they can become useful allies. So the number one thing would be don't try to push them away, but look at them curiously invite them in, allow them to be. Like, if you're sad and you need to cry, you cry. If you're anger and you want to hit a wall, hit a wall. Like, do whatever it takes, but don't push the emotions away, because they come as messengers. They have something to tell you, and they will come nagging and nagging if you push them away anyway. So might as well open the door, let them in, allow your emotions, allow whatever it is that you're feeling. Now, expressing them in a setting that is not appropriate, that is the problem. So then it becomes, how do we manage our emotions? Again, if you let them be and you become more and more familiar with them, by accepting them, first of all, it becomes much less, like those extreme spikes tend to then become calmer, because they don't have to scream for your attention. You're already listening. And then learn about emotional intelligence. I always say emotional intelligence, negotiations, goal setting, they all go hand in hand. So learn about emotions. Why are they there? What are they trying to tell you? For example, sadness simply says, hey, there is a form of grief here. There is a chapter ending. Anger says, hey, somebody bypassed your boundaries. It's time to step up or speak up. Every emotion has a message. So when we become aware of that and we learn about it and we try to use them in our favor, as in, oh, there is sadness again. Oh, that means I'm grieving something. There is a form of loss that I experience, whether it's a real loss or a perceived loss. The body reacts in the same way. And the third thing I would like to share is that we make such a big fuss of emotions while it doesn't have to be. So what is an emotion? Let's start with that already. An emotion is a physiological reaction to whatever it is that your body perceives as potentially dangerous for its survival, okay? And then the brain sends all these chemicals through the body and all these orders of saying, okay, now do this, now do that. For example, there is sadness, boom, we're going to create tears so that that stress and the nervous system can then calm down. When there is anger, boom, we're going to prepare for fight or flight so that we can see what is best reaction in this scenario. But when you observe your body, again, without judging, the length of that emotion going through your body physiologically and then calming down is actually super short. We tend to think that it's super long and it's this horrible feeling and I don't want to feel this, and we push it away. But it's by pushing away that it then becomes longer and longer. If we would just allow it to be, and again, it's not easy, it's not comfortable, but once you get the hang of it, it's okay. An emotion going through your body, a physiological reaction of your body through an emotion, you know how long it stays in your body, Jill?
90 seconds.
Absolutely. Just 90 seconds. And people think it's much longer. Just 90 seconds. Can you just breathe in and breathe out for 90 seconds? Can you allow yourself to feel whatever it is that you're feeling for 90 seconds? Or other people, when you see someone else going through an emotion, can you just allow that luxury of 90 seconds of time and attention and no judgment? That automatically calms things down. And as a negotiator, if you want to help somebody who's going through an emotion to reconnect to their neocortex and be in a more calm state of mind, it's through labeling the emotion. It's by saying, oh, it seems like, and then you put a name on it. Even if it's wrong, even if you perceived it wrong, they will tell you, no, that's not what I feel. And then they will tell you what they do feel, so you still win. So just put labels on it, as in not in a negative way, but just put a name on it. Oh, it seems like this frustrated you. Oh, it seems like this made you angry. Oh, I can perceive that this made you sad. Because that is acknowledging that the emotion is there, and that allows people to go through it better and faster.
If only everyone had your knowledge around it. Because I think I think there are people also who use the emotion as a, in the negotiating table, as like a weapon, right? They see the emotion. I've seen it particularly in like the business side of the world, not so much in medical side, but okay, so let's talk a little bit about emotional intelligence. Can we dig into, I think it's sometimes for people a sort of an abstract concept. Mm-hmm. And I would love to get your insight as to how cultivating it can help us connect with other people and ourselves, and how we use it in our daily lives to sort of, I guess, be, let that lead us, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, we already all have a level of emotional intelligence. It's, again, the awareness of it. Emotional intelligence is this combination of skill set that helps us navigate through life and connects us with our own needs, with needs of other people, and how we stand in the world. So it's aspects such as flexibility, resilience, agility, the capacity to express emotions, the capacity to feel emotions, the capacity to recognize emotions in other people. All these skills make it that it's an arsenal of, it's complementary to IQ. There's research that shows that EQ plays a much more important role in how successful people become. And yet in schools, we're so much more focused on IQ. And I think that's something that will also change in the coming years. Emotional intelligence is nothing new. It has been researched for the last 40 plus years. You can measure it. You can learn about it. You can develop it. And again, it all starts with self-awareness. It's really, once we do these inner negotiations and we become aware of everything that's happening internally, we start to understand how emotions play a massive role in every single thing we do, in every single decision we make. In the end, whether we want it or not, whether we realize it or not, we are emotional beings. We make decisions based on our emotions, based on what we want to feel or what we want to avoid feeling.
And how does that play into resilience?
So resilience is the capacity to go through adversity and stand back up with the same level of optimism. Because standing back up and being completely bitter, that's not resilience. That's just continuing on with life. And there are so many people who get this wrong because they continue with life forgetting, like trying to push away whatever it was that happened. And then 50 years later, they're still talking about the same thing with the same bitterness. Like, that's not resilience. Resilience is having this capacity of going through adversity, standing back up, and having the same zest for life, having the same joy of life, being able to laugh again, being able to love again. That is true resilience, of saying, okay, this happened. I didn't ask for it. I didn't want it, but here we are. And I'm not going to let that affect my joy of life.
I love the way you phrase that. How do you cultivate resilience for yourself and all in the way the world is and your world?
Well, when we got the diagnosis, I really thought my life was over. I thought that's it. My child is sick. It's a progressive disease. It's going to get worse and worse. How on earth am I ever going to be happy again? Like, this is it. This was my last smile. This was my last laugh. And I think it's a normal reaction, and a lot of people go through that. And then time passes and you learn to make peace with whatever is and become the best version of yourself to deal with it in the best way you can. And a lot of empathy is needed here to give yourself a break and not be so hard on yourself. I'm literally talking to the mirror now. but also acknowledging what you do well. I think this is something, especially for women, we tend to have all these expectations and requirements, and we do our best, and we just achieve things, and we think it's just normal. But it's not just normal. Like, we're so focused on the to-do list and everything we have to do that we never look at the what did we do list. So one of the exercises I give my clients is very simple. Like, in the evening when you're brushing your teeth, and this might sound narcissistic and I don't care, when you're brushing your teeth, literally look at yourself in the mirror and just tell yourself, well done for, and name three things that you did that day. And if you're in a very depressed state of mind, just well done for getting up today while I didn't feel like it. Well done for putting on my clothes while I preferred staying in my pajamas all day. Like, boom, that's a little win. And when you start acknowledging your wins, big and small, and you know that that evening you have to answer that question again, then you know what the beauty is? Your brain starts automatically looking for the things that went well so that you can tell yourself that in the evening. And boom, you shifted yourself through a whole new being to somebody who is more optimistic and positive in life.
Yeah, we do. I think you're right. We do that as women. Frequently, I see it, including I'm looking in the mirror right now, too.
So it's all, we all do it.
We do, and I think we don't acknowledge everything we have managed to accomplish.
Exactly. But imagine, just if you would take a piece of paper and write down all the adversity that happened to you, all the difficult times, all the times that you cried and thought, how on earth am I going to face this? But you did. And here you are. So you can, whatever it is that is your age, you can literally say, I have X years of experience in facing and overcoming adversity. And I have overcome 100% of the difficulties I've been through. And I have every skill I need to overcome everything else that's coming my way. Boom. That's resilience.
Okay. I'm going to add that to my, like, my bio.
Good.
Wonderful. I like that a lot. So, and really, like with chronic conditions, I often say, like, I look around, I'm like, oh, I wish I was here in life. Yeah. And then I go, okay, I am pretty far and have managed to make it through the day every day with spondylitis. Okay. So,
yes, absolutely. Yeah, well, that's, it is a win, isn't it?
It is a huge win. Okay. So do you have any specific habits that you use to stay in the right mindset that you could share?
I think just the fact that I can look back and say, wow, I did this, I did that. And I'm talking about overcoming emotional difficulties. I mean, I've had my healthy dose of difficulties that life threw my way. And here I am still enjoying life, still trying to be optimistic, still looking at the glass half full, doing fun stuff. And that in itself is for me a way of saying, you know what, there's absolutely more difficulty coming my way. I mean, again, I'm living with a child that has a fatal condition, so I know what's waiting unless there is a medical miracle. And I also know that I will get back up. It's because I know that I'm resilient that I can now live because without being so scared of everything and, oh my God, this might happen. Oh my God, that might happen. We are constantly fearing what might go wrong, because we don't trust our capacity to stand back up from what might go wrong. You see? So if you know you're resilient and you know you can face adversity and you know you can go through it and stand back up, it doesn't mean you're not going to feel it. Of course you're going to feel it, but you're going to allow yourself to feel it. And then you're going to stand back up and then slowly you're going to do fun things again. And if you know that is a given because that is who you are, then you stop fearing life and you start enjoying life.
I love, that is beautiful. Confidence. This is one of the things that is, I think, tough for a lot of people, particularly when you have been knocked down a lot or having a chronic disease. So in advocating for yourself, whether it's in the healthcare setting, in the family setting, the work setting, what do you think makes up the ability? How do you build the confidence to advocate for yourself?
That's a great question. I think, and it might sound boring because I repeat myself, it all starts again with self-awareness. Once you start allowing yourself to feel whatever it is that you're feeling, you will finally hear what it is that you need. So now you know what it is that you need. And then the second step is to have the courage to speak up for it. To have the courage to say no when it's a no, to say yes when it's a yes, to say, I don't agree with this, this is not okay with this, and to become comfortable with advocating for yourself and standing up for what you want and what you believe in. And this is, I think, something that naturally happens around the age of 40 for a lot of people, because we're just done with the pretending and the people pleasing. But if you're younger than 40, then just do it more actively, you know, start speaking up for your needs. And I believe confidence is a part of you being slightly scared or having a bit fear of doing it, but then doing it anyway, and then being proud of yourself. For me, confidence is proof to your brain that you did something that you thought was difficult. It can be physical, it can be emotional, it can be whatever it is. But confidence is built through doing difficult things and acknowledging yourself for it.
Yeah, that's awesome. And I think, and you use the courage word. I read somewhere, somebody called it, they said, courage is fear that has said its prayers. I thought
Ooh, I love that.
that was really, really powerful.
Yes.
And it is, I think there's, and there, we, I think we all move through different, and it is, you're leveling up, right? And you said it, the 40, okay, wait till you hit 50, because the gloves are off and you just say what you think the world needs to hear.
Yeah.
And you don't care the cost. But it's interesting because I think we do as we get older, but I think there's also this, we reach discomfort levels and then you break through and you get it done and you
Exactly.
just keep
And your
falling forward,
confidence
right?
grows with it. Yeah.
Yeah.
But
And
it's
I
the same. It's even if you, if I mean, we're now talking about emotional confidence, but even if you simply make it about physical confidence, like let's say you do something physically heavy, it just builds confidence and then you do it again and again. So for me, confidence is creating proof for your brain that you can do it. And but that starts with acknowledgement. And again, that acknowledgement part is what's often missing. We don't do it. We do something difficult and we move on to the next goal. Hey, wait a second. Just tell yourself, hey, well done. I did that
Yeah.
thing.
Well, I think we probably don't do that enough, just in general in life. And I think there's also one of the last topics I want to touch on is this idea of communication, right? We struggle to communicate needs if we know what they are and have the, sometimes we feel like we don't have the ability to have a productive conversation about things that we need to with our loved ones, with employers, with providers, we don't think we have what we need to actually express, or that we don't have the answer inside ourselves to ask for someone to agree with us and what we need. Does that make sense?
Kind of.
Maybe I'm struggling to communicate at the moment.
What is the question?
Yeah, I think it's like when if you don't have that confidence today, and you struggle with communicating your needs and having the confidence to communicate your needs, is there anything that you would recommend in a setting where maybe you're feeling like, I'm not sure what I need here or how to say it? How do you just bust through and do it?
I think an important aspect is in that situation, what I'm hearing is that you put too much power in the other party, that you put your needs in their hands. Whereas the goal is to always take your power back, especially patients. Doesn't matter who you're negotiating with. Let's stay in the medical world because our audience is from that sector. Take your power back. As a patient, you are the one who knows your body. You are the one who has to live with your body and with whatever condition you have. So the power is with you. You're going to see a doctor. They're recommending something. In the end, you have to live with it. Let's not forget that medical error is a leading cause of death in the US and all around the world. And some studies say it's number three. That's massive. That means you giving your power away to other people can literally kill you. So there has to be this collaboration between patients and the medical staff. It's not the medical staff dictating what needs to be done. You as a patient have rights and you need to use those rights, but you also have needs and those need to be expressed. And it starts with no understanding your needs. What is it that you need? Stop putting your power in other people's hands and thinking that everybody else knows better, whether that's family, doctors, whoever. They don't. You know your body best. You know your whoever it is that you're taking care of best. And it's a noble act to speak up for what you need. It's you're betraying yourself if you don't. So it's not a lack of I don't have the skills. It's a lack of I don't think I deserve to speak up for my needs. And that is a problem because you do. You have every right in the world. We need to stop giving so much power to other people. So my advice would be take your power back, stand up for what you need, be curious about what it is that you need. So go inward. And then once you have it, if it feels scary, doesn't matter. Push through the courage that you need and speak up for what you need in a calm and composed way. And if it doesn't come out in a calm and composed way, it doesn't matter. It will come later. But make the commitment to yourself that from today, I will speak up for what I need. No more keeping my mouth shut, no more people pleasing, no more saying it in a certain way because otherwise the other person this and that. Start defending yourself, because I truly believe when we do that and when we start making peace with ourselves, that is when we become calm and composed to deal normally and ethically with other people. It's not that we're scared of speaking up, it's we're scared of the emotions that will come when we speak up, because we don't know them and they come all of a sudden and we don't know how to manage them. But once you start managing them and you're not scared to all of a sudden start yelling when you don't mean it that way, then there is no fear in speaking up for your needs. The other party is not the enemy. It's not you against them. It's a collaboration that needs to be formed by always thinking, what is it that I need that another party might also need? Again, going back to my divorce negotiations, for example, I keep reminding my husband, we're going through this because we want a peaceful environment to co-parent our children. And we both want that. So then when it comes to the details, we're not going to be annoying or stingy or greedy or whatever, because the overall goal is more important than the little details. So don't see the other party as an adversary, as the enemy, as somebody who's holding back of what you need. See the other party as a way to come to satisfying your need and their need.
That's a different take.
It's the same with doctors. You know how many times I've had to negotiate with doctors and other people, and sometimes it's also okay to remind them. And I've said, once there was a doctor, he was like slightly aggressive even, and I told him in a very calm and composed way, I said, doctor, thank you for recommending me that. Just remind me, who is the decision maker in this? And he said, you are. I said, okay.
I love that.
Noted.
She who asks the questions holds the power in the conversation.
Absolutely.
And curiosity is a big piece of that. Okay, so last question here. Do you have a piece of advice, or, and I'd love to ask if you have like your own personal mantra.
My own personal mantra is, it's okay to be down. It's not okay to stay down.
That's a great way to land the plane.
Especially for everybody who is down at the moment, it's okay. It's okay. Feel it, go through it, allow yourself whatever it is that you want. If you want to do a few TV nights, do it, do whatever you need, be kind to yourself, but also know it's temporary. There comes a point where you're going to step back up. We're going to smile again. We're going to laugh again. We're going to be nice to ourselves again. We're going to go and, buy some nice clothes and do whatever we need to feel good again. And connect with other people and just enjoy life. I mean, we weren't born to suffer. That's just no way. I mean, pain is inevitable, of course. We're all going to go through the adversity. We're all going to go through hardship. That's just normal. We're all going to experience loss. That's just part of life. But it doesn't mean that we have to stay in that dark place. Like, stand back up, take your power back, connect to yourself, give yourself what you need, and enjoy life.
That's an amazing way to end this. Lucine, thank you so very much for joining us. Where can people find you, by the way?
You're very welcome. I am most active on LinkedIn. So LinkedIn is where I'm active. I recently started Instagram, still trying to figure that out. But
me too.
Yeah,
me too.
LinkedIn and Insta, very, very, very welcome to follow me, send me a message if there's anything else you need an answer on. If you're going through a very dark place and just need a pep talk, send me a message.
Beautiful. Thank you so very much.
Really, you're very welcome. It was a pleasure for me too.
SpondyCast was made possible by donations from the Spondylitis Association of America's individual members and our show's corporate sponsor, AbbVie. Since our founding in 1983, the Spondylitis Association of America has been the face, voice, and leading nationwide nonprofit educating, empowering, and advocating for people living with spondyloarthritis. Through our extensive work with patients, the medical community, and partners, we provide information and resources to to help people impacted by the disease live better lives and champion research to find a cure.